Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Couple with Breck, brewing a friend, bleed orange and blue to the bitter end. Come and join us, DDNVR. We are DNVR.
We are DNVR. We are live from Studio A here at the DNVR bar. And today the A stands for actually a position of need? Question mark.
Oh, that was a struggle city.
Struggle, but I think it works. I think it works. I got it out.
I don't know if that was a statement or if it was a question.
It was a question.
Okay.
It was a question. It's like when Ron Burgundy is just reading the teleprompter and they put question marks at the end of everything. Yeah. I squeezed that question mark in at the end because today we're going to talk about Greg Dulcich and if he was drafted at a position of need, but not for depth. But for a starter, we'll get to that in just a second. But first, a shout out to MSU Denver Online, the presenting sponsor of this show, and also DraftKings,
yes,
the presenting sponsor of this show. So shout out DraftKings Sportsbook, where you can bet $5 to win $150
on any
NBA money line. And you don't even have to win,
yep,
which is like maybe even too easy for my taste.
Oh, so you would pass that up.
Well, I'm just saying like, maybe we shouldn't do participation trophies.
Oh,
but DraftKings saying, hey, you know what? You come over here, you play some DraftKings, you'll get a participation trophy. And while maybe I'm too much of a hard ass, you know, they're nicer than me.
Yes,
so there you go.
Hit up free money.
Hit up DraftKings Sportsbook and get that $5 to win $150. You can also get a sign-up bonus up to $1,000 when you use the code DNVR. So check them out over at DraftKings Sportsbook. All right. Greg Dulcich. TE1? Week 1. That is the question. And I wonder if we're all going to be on the same page here. I guess I'll start with Mace. Mace, TE1, week 1.
No.
Ah.
Eventually, okay. Yes. Not week 1. Maybe not this year.
Maybe not this year. Okay, that's...
Wow.
I like that, because that's where I would definitely disagree.
He's got to bulk up.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, he's got to add probably... 8 to 10 pounds in the weight room while not losing what speed he has.
That's all.
If he can do that, and look, he's a willing blocker, but that's on the film at UCLA, but willing and being 243 as an inline tight end, that doesn't go hand in hand.
Right.
He's going to have to add a little more bulk, work on his technique a little bit. That's going to determine when he becomes tight end one. He'll play. He'll get some reps, but until he can be that all-around guy, he's going to be situational.
Well, and we have a comment coming in from Nathan Lee. It says, a whole podcast to say what Mace just said? No, And I couldn't disagree with that more. Well, I think this is a yes. He is the week one starter.
Also, just so you know, this isn't the only thing we're going to talk about on the whole podcast.
but the reason is why it's yes isn't necessarily because of what Greg Dulcich brings.
Yep.
It's because of what the other guys don't bring. Look, there's now three big guys in terms of the starting three who could start for the Broncos. It's Greg Dulcich, it's Eric Tomlinson, and it's Albert Okwuegbunam. And Eric Tomlinson is as much of a blocking tight end as you can get. Last year, he had one catch, a single catch for 7 yards. He didn't even get a first down with that catch if it was a first and 10 situation there. No touchdowns. In fact, in his career, he has one touchdown, one receiving touchdown. In fact, in his entire career, which is nearly 10 years long, he has 18 catches. Yikes. That is pretty much less than half of what Albert O had just last year. So now we flip to Albert O. Okay, Albert O last year was way more productive than Aaron Tomlinson. Albert O, 33 catches for 330 yards. I really like the prospect of Albert O. I do not think the Denver Broncos and this new coaching staff like him much at all. And I hope that he can change their mind. I hope that they're willing to see what he can become, what weapon he can be. And I think they are, because they view him right now as pretty much a wide receiver in a tight end's body. And that's fine and great in their mind, but they're not going to treat him like a full tight end right now. And I think that's exactly why they went out and got Greg Dulcich, is to be more of an all-around tight end, be more of a guy where when he's on the field, he's not tipping their hand. So I don't think this is about Greg Dulcich being a finished product and being that guy. And I agree with Mace that he needs to get bigger and work on his blocking. But right now, you look at these guys, one is a complete blocker, only a blocker. The other guy is a complete receiver and only a receiver. And Greg Dulcich is somewhere in the middle, and I think that's why he's going to be the starter.
I'm sad because I thought I had an original point and you took it. But I was going to say, I think this staff doesn't necessarily love Albert O. And so while Albert O is everyone's favorite maybe tight end on the roster, except for, you know, the big Dulcich stands. That's a mouthful.
It's tough.
There are Dulcich stands out there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at the hair. How could he not have stands? And the mustache. I'm more a fan of the mustache.
And the confidence.
Yep, yep. They're out there. The Dulcich stands. But everyone loves Albert O. You know, everyone thinks that he has a lot of potential. He obviously does. He's huge and he's fast. And that's what, you know, at least from a fan perspective, that's what people love.
Problem is, he let the thing that he's supposed to be really good at, catching the ball, he struggled at.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's balls go through his hands.
And the only time he really got looked at was when Drew Lock was out there, because those two, you know, went way back. So,
well, Teddy gave him some shots, too.
He did. I wonder
if Teddy lost confidence in him when that ball in the Baltimore game did go through his hands.
It's very possible.
Yeah.
But I'll end somewhere in the middle here, because I do not want to let go of what I know about tight end, which is it may be the hardest position in football, maybe other than quarterback, to come in and start right away. And even then, quarterbacks we've seen a lot who come in and start right away and succeed. Tight ends, it's very rare. Mm-hmm. I mean, remember, you know, TJ Hawkinson, he was considered to be the most pro-ready prospect when he came out in that draft. Well, he didn't have a great rookie season.
He got hurt, though.
That's true. Noah
Fant.
He had
a really good first game.
Yes, he did. Yeah. I remember it was like 100 and something yards.
Yeah.
Noah Fant was not ready to go when he was a rookie. And he ended up, I think, having the best season out of those rookies.
Yep. They shoved him out there anyway.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it is very difficult.
But they were asking him to do things that he couldn't do. Like his second game, you're asking him to go one-on-one on the edge with Khalil Mack. What are you doing, Rich?
For sure. But if you're going to be on the field, you're going to probably have to take some tough matchups. And so, again, I have to keep that in mind at all times is – you got to basically learn how to be an NFL offensive lineman and an NFL wide receiver in the time that usually you only have to learn one position. So I don't know about week one. In fact, I could actually see Eric Tomlinson being TE1 week one just because he's the most ready. You know, they'll just say, hey, we got plenty of wide receivers. We don't need to throw it to him. We need someone who can block for us on outside zone runs. So that wouldn't shock me.
How about if they come out in an I formation in week one, and you have not only have Tomlinson as your tight end, but you have Andrew Beck as your fullback,
and maybe Dulcich on the other side?
And then you hand the ball off 10 straight times to start Russell Wilson's tenure in Denver.
He's taking a shot on the first play.
Yep, he is.
So anyways, I'm somewhere in between, but I completely agree with the fact that he was drafted to be better than Alberto and more integral to this offense than Alberto. Mm-hmm. I am with you that I don't think this staff necessarily sees it for him, especially because I just think they don't think he can ever block.
Yeah, and it's a bummer for me because I really like the threat that Alberto brings. And we have a question coming in from Shiloh who says, odds we look to sign someone like Kyle Rudolph or Tyler Kroft to bring in additionally in the room. And to my question to that would be, one got to go then. Yep. And it's not going to be the guy that you just signed if it's a Kyle Rudolph. And so it's clear who that would be. They really like Eric Tomlinson. Nathaniel Hackett loves him as a person.
I mean, he's a seventh, or a sixth offensive lineman.
Yes, exactly. And versatile. And so, no, it wouldn't be Eric Dulcich. It wouldn't be Eric Tomlinson. You'd be letting Alberto go. And to me, man, that would be crushing just for the possibility. He's not Julius Thomas, but he has the potential to be that type of player in terms of just an unguardable threat at tight end. I would hate to see that go when he's still very much developing.
Well, the other thing is also with those two names, Rudolph and Kroft, what are the chances that one of those two is still available at the start of training camp?
Very good.
I think they're going to let this tight end room as it is play out through OTAs, see where they are, and then if they need something, you'll find someone available on the market and then go from there.
What was Dulcich's weight? 238?
243.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not gonna have fun just at that weight trying to block people.
You know what's just so interesting about the Broncos' two first picks? We talked about how this coaching staff really wanted bigger pass rushers. They wanted guys that could also defend the run and bigger bodies because they didn't view Malik Reed as one of those. They draft an undersized outside linebacker, a guy who still has 15 pounds on Malik Reed, so certainly he's more in the middle, but not a huge guy. And then with Eric Tomlinson, they want a blocker, yet he's 15 pounds less than Alberto. Yeah. And of course, weight doesn't mean everything, but when you look at Eric Tomlinson, he's like 275, yeah, so it certainly
helps. He's literally
helps.
An offensive lineman.
Yes, exactly. I mean, 20 years ago, he was an offensive tackle.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, you might even be able to make the case that he could play offensive tackle for some schemes in the NFL.
Yeah.
Maybe even this one. But, obviously, that's not what he was brought here to do. I just think – I don't know. I hate to hold this against Greg Dulcich because he's a third-round NFL draft pick, and that's what he should be considered right now. He was also a walk-on at UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's a physical freak or anything like that. He's not particularly jacked. And, he's kind of a finesse player. That's what he's good at. You know, he said, I create big plays. That's what I do. And he's really, like, smooth in the way that he goes about getting open. But you put him against any NFL edge rusher, and I think he's going to have a serious issue.
But here's the thing. I think he'll work to get better.
No, he will.
And that's where the walk-on thing, I think, actually is an advantage.
Totally.
And that's why I think playing the long game with him, can I see him doing what he needs to do in order to be an every down tight end? Absolutely. And I think that's when George Payton kind of talks about guys who fit the culture, getting players who are good people on and off the field, getting character guys. Part of that character is putting in the work, is knowing that they're going to put in the work and be diligent and do everything they can to maximize who and what they are. It certainly does not hurt that your offensive coordinator is a former tight ends coach as well.
Yeah.
And Justin Outen,
he's going to love him.
Yeah,
some
Greg Dulcich. Seemed really excited on Saturday when he was talking about Greg Dulcich. And I think it's a little more than just, oh, I'm introducing this guy because he's an offensive player. I'm the OC. I think Justin Outen really wanted him.
Yeah.
Well, and the reason that he loves him is that's his background, is tight end. So he's pumped that the first offensive player that's taken in the Nathaniel Hackett, Justin Outen tenure in Denver was a tight end.
Yeah, I think it was a little bone thrown to Outen, who I have a feeling just said, like, Alberto's not exactly my type.
Yep, exactly. You're 100% right.
And a lot of comments coming in. I just want to, like, one person said, Kyle Pitts is 246. We cannot compare Kyle Pitts and Greg Dulcich. Just stand them next to each other, and you'll see the difference.
Yes, exactly.
But, like, I'm not saying he's tiny by any means. It's just his frame combined with his, you know, him being undersized is going to make it very difficult for him early. Now, would I be surprised if 2 years from now he looks like a, you know, a statue?
No.
No, not at all.
And he's 260 then.
Right, and maybe that's even too big, but 250, 252, you know, he's put on 10 pounds of muscle. He looks like a beast. That's very possible. And then, you know, we're talking about Nick Benito being undersized too. Someone said, well, Von Miller came in at, you know, 245 or whatever. And I think it's a good point. Now, it's about skill also, not just like you don't just put on 10 pounds and suddenly get better at defending the run. You just have to learn how to do it.
Well, also, Von Miller came in over 10 years ago to the NFL. Since then, the edge rusher position has changed drastically. I mean, Bradley Chubb, his size is kind of the new size for outside linebackers, pass rushers at, you know, 265, 270 pounds. That's the new outside linebacker. And Vaughn has incredible skills that make him incredibly unique. And one of the things that I like about Nick Benito is his just pure speed rush is about as good as it gets in this draft. And that's why the Broncos, there's so much upside with him. He just needs to develop the rest of his game because he has first round edge talent, just purely rushing the passer from the speed.
Yeah, Nick Benito has flashes on tape that have Von Miller vibes. I'm not going to compare them by any means. Like even defending the run, he'll do the thing where he fakes outside and then dips inside and goes and makes a tackle on the, like that's all Von Miller, you know. That was like his signature move against the run. So
did Shane Ray though.
Oh, to exactly. Be fair,
coming out.
And we love Shane Ray coming out. Yeah. We love Bradley Chubb coming out.
So, we're talking about all first round picks, by the way, except for Benito.
Except for Benito, who many people thought should have been a first round pick. So we'll see. But it's interesting, Zach, that you mentioned the size thing because it's ever fluctuating. There's always a counter move. In fact, I think like Javonte Williams is a counter move to everyone getting smaller at linebacker. And you see what happens when you try to tackle Javonte Williams with these little guys that you have, you know, trying to fly around out there and defend Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert. So
you don't even need Javonte Williams. Look at what Dearness Johnson did to what was left at inside linebacker.
That should
in
almost
Cleveland
be
last
a
October.
Banned word on this. Like, that was one of the worst things I've ever watched. Just Dearness Johnson, 7 yards a pop. That was painful.
Just running over people.
Broncos need to stop, need to get the ball back. Dearness Johnson. Just their face all the way down the field.
That game was awful. That was also Vaughn's last game as a Bronco.
Sure if was. A three-point game could be a blowout, that was it.
Yeah, really felt like it.
But
I'll just say this. I think Nick Benito is almost more like the new wave of pass rushers that are trying to get smaller because, like, you're facing less teams that want to run. And you're facing these quarterbacks who literally just run around back there for, like, 6 seconds. And, like, maybe two of the best are in this division in Herbert and Mahomes. Obviously, Mahomes is the number one. He gets back there. He flips one way. He flips the other way. Like, Bradley Chubb is not chasing that down. Maybe Nick Benito can.
Yeah, it's a really good point, and you hope that that's something that this is the new wave, and the Broncos are getting on this new wave. And also, they have the size on the other side to balance it out. Randy Gregory's massive. Bradley Chubb is massive, and so they complement each other, and you can put them in advantageous positions.
Yeah,
and that's going to be a huge thing with this defense is using the outside linebackers to your strength. But going back to tight end, I have a major question about Greg Dulcich, and just something isn't adding up, and I gotta ask you guys to help me sort that out. But first I gotta tell you about our friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook, who are, like you said, Ryan, giving you $150 in free bets when you bet $5 on any NBA game. That's all you have to do. Place a bet, you get $150, and then you can use that sweet money on the Avs playoffs. You can use it anywhere over at DraftKings Sportsbook, and they're also giving customers a same game parlay with three or more legs. You get a free bet back up to $25 if one leg doesn't hit. So just get in, do that. Like I said, every single day they're having offers like this, or they're giving you a 50% profit boost, 100% profit boost. It is fantastic. So download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code DNVR when you sign up to get all of these offers. That's promo code DNVR only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
Game 1 of the Avs Stanley Cup run starts tonight. Cannot wait. I'm actually going to the game, which means one more open spot for you guys here at the DNVR bar. And my biggest piece of advice, get here early. Yeah, if you want to sit during the game, which sometimes I don't even want to sit during the game. I just like to stand. But if you do want to sit, if you want to, you know, have a nice meal, all that stuff, with a place to sit and do it, come early.
Games
for the love of God, come early.
Games at 7:30, so right when you're off of work, get here.
Do not hesitate. Even if you get off work at 3 o'clock, just come. Just don't even mess with it. Just come, hang out. Maybe you can finish work here. Actually, there was some people I was sitting by at the Nuggets playoff game the other night. They both had their laptops out right until game time.
Right? I'm like, I respect
this. But anyways, come down, hang out. It's going to be a blast, no matter what. We want to pack the house. You know, have some beers, have some food. And watch the Avs start this thing off. Cannot wait. And if you're staying home and you're saying, man, I can't watch this game, this is some BS. Well, you got to hit up our friends over at Ivaca TV, where you can sign up now and get $10 off your first 3 months, which maybe that doesn't seem like a lot until you find out that it's $25 a month. You're getting an insane discount by getting $10 off, and it's awesome. You can watch the Nuggets. You can watch the Avs. You can watch the Rockies. So check them out over at Ivaca TV. They're solving the problem that many of us have been dealing with for multiple years now, and we thank them for that. We also thank them for their support of this show. So use the code DNVR when you sign up over there. $10 off your first 3 months. Awesome deal.
It's a fantastic deal. And so my question about Greg Dulcich, one of the things that the Broncos talked about, George Payton and Nathaniel Hackett, is that he is this vertical threat. He brings a threat to the defense at a different position outside a wide receiver. Greg Dulcich talks about how he brings that vertical threat as well, how he is fast. He said he has elite speed. So we're hearing all these things about speed. And again, I just keep thinking, isn't that what Albert O is? But anyways, we've kind of talked about that. But then I see his 40 time.
Yep.
And I see a 4.69. To put that in perspective, Albert O ran a 4.49. Noah Fant ran a 4.540. And both of those guys were top in their class their specific years. So while Greg Dulcich isn't a 5.40-yard dash, he's not like super slow, his speed just simply in this 40 time isn't elite. And it makes me question a little bit, was he just opening this vertical threat going up against the Pac-12? And Ryan, no shame to the Pac-12, but where is this disconnect? Did he have a little hamstring issue when he ran the 40? Then he shouldn't have ran the 40. But what did he trip? Was something going on where this 4.69 isn't the truth? Because if the 4.69 is the truth, then it scares me about his ability to be a deep threat in the NFL.
First of all, I would venture to say that it's maybe more difficult to get open in the Pac-12 against those linebackers, because the Pac-12 is a spread it out, throw it conference. So you're not necessarily trying to get big run thumping linebackers, save for Nate Landman, the Hammer shout out. But you know, most teams are going with those tiny, they might even be using a safety down there. So, it's not that, I don't think.
Okay.
I think that it's either if Greg Dulcich is going to be right, and he actually has, you know, maybe not elite speed, but elite separation ability, it's because the 40 time is overrated. And it's mostly about quickness off the line. And so maybe for him, it's more about first step, the way he comes in and out of breaks. He creates a lot of separation. That isn't really a speed stat. You know, like if we're talking Madden here, you could be a 99 speed with a 75 release and you're not getting open. You can also be an 88 speed with a 99 release and you're open every time.
But see, to me, and Henry agrees with you here, he says 40 time doesn't matter. I kind of disagree with that a little bit. It shows what your top end speed can be. He says that he has a better 40 time than TJ Hockenson and plenty of others just behind Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce is not take the top off of defense.
He can, though.
He's not. That's not what his game is now.
But tight ends shouldn't really be your take a top off a defense.
But that's what Greg Dulcich is being sold to us as. And so that's my issue. I just don't think that he's going to be this dangerous vertical threat. I think where you find his sweet spot is, what is Travis Kelce? He's 7 yards and he just consistent, at least when he plays the Broncos, it's 7 yards, 7 yards.
You're like, he's also why can't you cover this guy?
But it's because he has those things you're talking about that separation, about the release. He's fantastic at that. And I think that's where Greg eventually finds his spot. Isn't 5 to 7 yards. It's 10 to 12 yards, where he does use some of his his speed to get past that first line. But he's not going to be tearing defenses up by just running straight past them. And I think this is kind of where we find Greg's spot. And that's okay, because the Broncos have a 4-2-40 guy potentially and KJ Hamler. They have guys in Tim and Court that can do jump balls 40 yards down the line of scrimmage. I just think we're being sold Greg Dulcich in a way that I don't think he's going to turn into, but it's not bad.
Here's what I'll say is that no one is thinking about like tight end running a 9 route on the outside and beating a corner. And if you are, you're just thinking about it wrong.
Then why do they keep saying vertical threat, vertical threat, vertical, take the top off of defense?
Because where he can be really dangerous is in the seam. And I think that's where you get the term vertical threat, because he's literally running a vertical
but
route.
That's the same. I mean, if he's running straight up the middle of the field as opposed to straight down the outside of the field,
it's
that's
different
still the same.
Because he's not going to be doing that against, like, he could be. But when you think about, like, running, hitting a seam, you're not thinking about, like, man coverage running right past the guy. Sometimes you can hit that there. But you're thinking more about, like, you're, you know, against the zone. And can he get behind that linebacker fast enough so that Russell Wilson can get it over the linebacker, under the safety, hit him in that seam, and maybe he can take off after that? It's more about, you know, working that seam. And if you have speed, it makes it a lot easier on the quarterback to not have to wait for you to get to that spot. You just zoom to that spot. So you shouldn't be thinking about him scoring 60-yard touchdowns. You should be thinking about him having like 20, 25-yard catches up the seam.
See, and that's what I'm saying, that 10 to 20-yard spot. So maybe it's not the speed. He's got elite acceleration, and that's what causes him to be able to get – I'm not saying it's a big issue. I'm just saying that the way he's being described right now, I think Broncos fans are a little confused at what his role is going to be.
At the same time, they're probably going to need him to be that at some point, because – one thing we've seen from Russell Wilson when he uses tight ends, it's when they're going down the seam vertical.
Yep.
Not when they're running those short to intermediate routes.
Which would have been great with Noah Fant.
You know what was really interesting? I think it was Nathaniel Hackett on the phone call to let Greg Dulcich know that they'd just taken him. He said, our quarterback has been begging to throw to tight ends. He's been begging to throw to tight ends. And I found that so interesting because Russell Wilson has not ever used a tight end that much.
He did Jimmy Graham. I mean, Jimmy Graham had double-digit touchdowns 1 year. Another year he had, I think, like 800 or 900 yards.
But
Jimmy Graham was someone who could get downfield vertically.
So, but that's what I'm saying is I think Russ has come here and said, yeah, I really want to use a tight end. The reason I haven't used tight ends for the majority of my career, 8 other years of his 10 years, is because I haven't had the right one, and I haven't had that Jimmy Graham type. So go get me that guy. And I think that's probably what the Broncos did with this pick. I don't think it was because just Justin Outen wanted a tight end or because they didn't like Albert O. I think it's because they said they're having a lot of input from Russ, and that's a smart thing to do.
I mean, I think the interesting thing, though, to look back on is if Trey McBride had fallen to 64.
Yeah.
I think Trey McBride would be a Denver Bronco today.
I think he would, too, which is really interesting. Because
he has a different skill set than Dulcich.
Right.
But we would be saying definitely Trey McBride is your week one starter.
Right.
Because he's bigger and he should be able to translate a little bit better immediately as a blocker.
And a lot of people had those two guys, you know, 1-2.
Right. I mean, but I think there's like, this is not 1-2 where they're close. I think there's a gap between 1 and 2. And that's fine. There was what, you know, half a round or more than half a round. I think 25 picks separating McBride and Dulcich. So, you know, 2/3 of a round, basically. Yep. And that I think is fair based on kind of what their levels are and especially what they can do immediately.
If you want to talk about, though, getting open against lesser competition, I do worry about that with Trey McBride, just in terms of what it's going to be like for him going up against guys who are multiple levels above. You know, the Pac-12 might even be 2 levels, you know, in terms of, like, in the second tier of college football in terms of
I'm not even sure the Pac-10 was one of the 5 best conferences last year.
Well, the Pac-10 doesn't exist.
Pac-12.
If it were
Pac-12.
Yeah, and I think
American was a better conference in terms of talent last year.
I would,
than the Pac-12.
Wow. I wouldn't even fight that. I mean, but it's definitely better than the
Mountain West. American had a much better team than anybody in the Pac-12 in Cincinnati.
For sure. Yeah, I wouldn't fight it. So that's what I mean. It's a whole step for Greg Dulcich. Yeah. It's a whole other step for Trey McBride. It'll be interesting to see just how he adjusts. I love the fit for Trey McBride.
Yeah, I do too. But now looking at Dulcich, what do we expect for his season this year? Because as you said, Ryan, tight ends typically take a long time in order to transfer over into the NFL. Typically, that first year, the stats aren't lighting it up. It doesn't look like a great year. And Mace doesn't think he starts potentially all year. Ryan, you think it may be somewhere in the middle. I think he starts week one. So what are we guessing for his stats?
Interesting. First, I want to get a week on it from everyone. I know you're week one.
Yep.
What week is Greg Dulcich the TE1?
Okay, so Jacksonville presumably is the October 30th. That's week eight, right?
Oh, yeah.
30, 23, 16, 9, 2. Yeah, that's week eight.
I have no idea what
okay.
he's doing. I didn't either.
Week 10.
Week 10, all right.
Starts all right. Coming out of the bye.
I like okay. that.
Because I'm going to guess. No, we don't know this for sure. I would expect the Broncos will have a bye after London.
Yep.
They don't always do this anymore, but I think that will be the – I think the Broncos – maybe insist on that. And you know what? That's as close to that first weekend of November is as close to a perfect bye as you can get anyway.
Yep. Don't get me started especially on dreaming Wisconsin's about London home. Because I it's like one of my two main thoughts. My main thought right now is going to the Avs game tonight. After that, I'm thinking about London. How about this, though?
Yeah.
The next week, the next weekend, the Avs play in Finland.
Yep. I mean, the sports gods are lining up for a perfect trip to Europe.
I looked, it's like a 3.5 hour flight.
Yeah.
So if it lines up with the bye week,
especially
too,
with the bye week,
we're gonna have ourselves
3.5 hours from London to help. Well, you're going reasonably far east into Europe, and you're going north for the north zone. Yeah.
Even
then,
though,
I didn't realize it was that long a flight from London to Helsinki.
I mean, that was just on one Google search, the top result that I went with. So I don't even know like what cities we were going between.
There's a way to figure this out. Have you ever used the website Great Circle Mapper?
Cannot say I have.
No, I have not.
It's awesome. You can figure out the air distance between any two cities on the planet and what the most direct route is.
Ah.
So like if you, for example, did like New York to Mumbai, it would have you going like literally over Russia, which I guess you can't do anymore. So you can look right now and say London to Helsinki. This is by the way fascinating podcasting.
It is.
All right, it is drum roll, 1,151 miles.
That is far.
So that's a little over 2 hours.
Okay, yeah, that's not as bad.
According to Google, it's saying actual flights is saying 2 hours and 50 minutes.
Okay, I think that's actually what I saw.
Look, you've come that
exactly.
If
that's
you've
my
gone
thought.
That far, and there will probably be a lot of people who do this.
Yep. Oh yeah, and I'm
if
be
you've
one
come
of them.
Back, you know, you saw Shawshank Redemption, right?
Yes, of course.
If you've come this far, maybe you're willing to go a little farther.
Right.
If you've come to London, maybe you're willing to go to Scandinavia.
And again, like, when are you ever going to get the chance to do that? To see two. Actually, I'll just say it. Never again in your life will you get a chance to see two Denver teams play in Europe within a 7-day span.
Especially with our job where you can't take off a week in the middle of a football season. Mm-hmm. It just lines up perfectly where it's the 1 week off.
Right. And as we've talked about, we would hit London for that whole week, do our shows from there. And then, so we'd be out there for a week. Then you get a whole other week that you can go explore a different part of the world.
Yep. And the official announcement will come tomorrow morning. So stay tuned.
I'm like nervous about that.
Yeah.
I don't like just because I haven't seen a full on 100% confirmation yet.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh man, if I get this ripped from me and we all get this ripped from us,
it's going to
be a very sad day.
Everyone suspects it, but the NFL has been so cagey about like kind of probably internally about kind of talking around it.
Yeah.
Like
the NFL, because it's been leaked and a lot of people are talking about these last 24 hours. What if they just pulled the rug? What if that was the initial plan, but they were pissed that it got out somehow, so they're just pulling it from the Broncos?
Yeah, that would really suck.
It would really suck. And speaking of things that may suck is Greg Dulcich's stat line. People may not be thrilled about it.
I'll say he starts week 7, by the way.
Week 7. Okay. So we all think he does start this week. So you think he's starting in London?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, there we go.
I feel like he's got a London vibe.
There we go. So what do you think? What are his stats going to be?
35 catches.
Whoa.
395 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Okay. Interestingly enough, you don't think he's going to start until the latest of all of us. I think he's going to start the earliest And I think it's going to be way more underwhelming than that.
Oh.
I think it's going to be about 25 catches, 24 catches.
A little over one catch a week.
Yep,
for about 250 yards.
If he starts the whole season and that's his stat line, we're talking about him being a bust.
Yeah,
to be fair.
No, I don't think so, because the ball, someone's not going to eat.
That's true.
And if it's Greg Dulcich, I think everyone's understanding about that.
He can't complain.
If it's Cortland Sutton or Jerry Jeudy and they're healthy throughout the season, then that's going to be a big issue if those guys are going for 550, 600 yards. But remember, Noah Fant, his rookie year, he started 11 games. He had 40 catches for 562 yards. That was an incredible season. So I'm saying he's going to be just above half of that. And Noah Fant was the tight end on the roster. Albert O's still going to get production. In fact, I think Albert O matches his production. So when you look at the tight end room, you're saying, okay, they were totally productive, fine enough. And then you're going to look at the receivers and say, those guys are the one to eat.
I will say there's going to be a lot more balls than there were last year.
Mm-hmm. So those are going to be going to Tim, Cortland, Jerry.
Yep, for sure. I think everyone's going to eat more. I'm going to say...
Even Melvin Gordon's going to eat more in the passing game.
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be Badger to Badger.
They're going
to
be badgering defenses.
Yeah. Low-key big numbers out of the backfield, I think, for Gordon this year.
I'm going to say... I got to think about yards per catch. He gets a lot of those.
Yep.
So I'm going to say 35 catches, 500 yards.
Oh, my goodness.
How many touchdowns?
Two.
Okay.
So you're essentially saying he's going to be really close to what Noah Fant did as a rookie. And Noah Fant had the best rookie year for a Broncos tight end in their history.
Yep. How many rookies?
You are crazy.
How many rookies? The only one. How many rookies played with an elite quarterback? Because Julius Thomas wasn't a rookie, right, with Peyton?
Actually, he was. It was not until his third year that he really got on the field.
I don't know about rookies.
TJ Hockenson. When he was injured, got Matt Stafford in Detroit.
I'm talking about just Broncos.
Like rookie tight ends.
Yeah.
Shannon Sharpe was still a receiver, converting a tight end.
Right.
And he didn't play.
And they didn't throw
it. It took him like 3 years to really start becoming productive.
So I'm just saying this is going to be the best quarterback ratio to drafted tight end, highest drafted tight end.
Riley Odom's number five.
The one I think of is Cutler and Scheffler, and I don't know what he did as rookies.
If we're going to go back, we got to look at Riley Odom's, because that's, and if we're talking about rookie tight ends, he was drafted to be very productive because he was number five overall pick.
To be fair, totally and his, different era, though.
Right.
Yes.
His quarterback in 1972, most of that year was Charlie Johnson. Riley Odom's in 72 did not start. 21 catches, 320 yards, one touchdown.
And that was the number five overall pick. I'm talking about in terms of, yards per catch. I do think he can be as productive as Noah Fant just because of the difference in quarterback.
Then how in the world is he not starting week one if he's going to be that good?
Well, I think starting is just, he's going to be used in a lot of situations and a lot of packages. So I don't think, while he might not start, I think he's still going to be on the field a lot no matter what.
Man, I think you're crazy. I think you're setting the bar way too high. You're letting people set up for big time failure with what he's going to do or not do this year, because I think he would have more receiving yards in your case than KJ Hamler, right?
Fourth receiver. My expectation for KJ Hamler is nothing.
So then, what do you have Tim going for? What do you have Cortland going for? What do you have Jerry going for?
I think there's 2,000 yard receivers.
Okay.
I'll say Cortland and Jerry.
Okay.
And I think Tim is like 800. So there we're at 2,800. And then there's, 2,000 extra or at 1,500 extra yards to go around.
So what's Albert O doing?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, what you said.
300 yards, basically.
Yeah.
For Albert O.
Yeah.
And see, I think that's what Albert O has. I think they combined for that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean... We'll see.
Henry
was the first one to point.
How many yards are you getting from the tight end position? I think that's a fair question to ask here. Are you
600?
You're getting about roughly 35, 40 yards a game from tight end.
That's consistently.
Yeah.
And so the guy that is you are the one that's saying, watch out, tight ends don't produce a lot, tight ends don't produce a lot. He's gonna produce a lot.
I think he's gonna. I mean, 35 catches is nothing. I just think that his catches are gonna be worth a lot. He's gonna come in. They're gonna find the mismatch. They're gonna work it for a big play. He'll go back out, and Eric Tomlinson can come in, and they'll run the ball again.
And that'd be great if he has those stats. It'd be great.
Like, I don't think asking 35 catches is a lot. I'm just putting the yards up high because I think his catches are gonna be long catches.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if Eric Tomlinson actually leads the tight ends in touchdowns because he catches like a bunch of 1 yard touchdowns in goal to go?
I mean,
and I could really see that happening.
Has he ever had more than one in a season?
I don't think he only has one.
He has one ever? For his career. But when you get a situation like this where you don't really have an alpha right now, sometimes it's just your short yardage specialist who ends up having a bunch. I seem to recall Patrick Hape having more touchdowns for this team than you would have expected, just because they drop him in goal line, he'd catch like a 1 yard touchdown pass from Brian Greasy or Jake Plummer back in
the right. I mean, he's going to be the lead. No one's going to be focusing on him, especially right. You know, you get a hard play action going one way and he just leaks out towards the pylon the other way.
No, I think there's going to be more. If he has a touchdown, it's going to be on the ground. He's going to be lined up.
Fullback.
He's going to be lined up as a fullback, he's going to take a handoff in.
Didn't Mitch Unrein line up as a fullback and get a touchdown catch from Peyton Manning? I'm saying these things happen.
Who would be the most electric player on the team to get a touchdown? Like, just the most random but awesome.
I mean, it's got to be a big guy, right?
DJ Jones.
Sure.
Yeah, that'd be good. Garrett Bowles doesn't.
I always thought Alexander Johnson should have got a chance to come in as a fullback.
Just kind of that mentality that he brings.
Right.
We would have done a crazy celebration.
He's so big and so strong. His legs are so massive that I just felt like give him the ball and let him churn.
Yeah, DJ Jones would be a fun one.
Yeah.
They had Doma Topeka lined up a couple times.
They did.
Mm-hmm. And Paxton Lynch threw a pick on the goal line. Should have just handed it off to him.
That was brutal.
It was very brutal. All right, I want to give a shout-out. This is a great conversation. I want to give a shout-out to Green Mountain Dental Group, locally owned right outside of the downtown, and they're the best damn family-owned dentist group in the metro area. Heck, I don't know this for sure, but you could see them down here watching the Avs game tonight at the DNVR bar. They're big Colorado sports fans, big Avs fans especially. Whole family's got jerseys on when they come through. So shout out to them. They take care of you. They'll do a great job. And when you sign up for a cleaning, x-ray, and exam over there, they'll hook you up with a free Sonicare toothbrush. So hit up our friends over at Green Mountain Dental Group.
And so I got to get your prediction. Who is the week one starter?
Eric Tomlinson,
Mace?
Tomlinson gets the first snap.
Tomlinson, how about that? And I'll go with Dulcich there.
I'm thinking there might be two tight ends on the field on the first play for a big wide zone play action fake. Cortland Sutton, one-on-one down the sideline, jump ball.
There we go. I love it. You know Russ would like to start that way.
Yep.
Get everyone. Just don't start with a tight end around.
Or do. Just I don't know. See you, if you can you make
have
it work.
You have elite speed with Dulcich, so you might as well.
Double tight end double reverse.
Oh, wow. Do you start off with the slow guy, hand it to Tomlinson?
No, you line up with Alberto, Dulcich, and you hand it to Dulcich, but he flips it to Alberto.
Man, and then they throw the ball. So the first
then he
pass,
flips it back
the first
to Russ.
Pass in the Russell Wilson era isn't even from Russ.
I like it.
Man, that'd be something.
It would not work.
I could see, man, I could see Hackett doing something like that.
The Broncos might actually be able to make trick plays work now because they'll be good.
They'll be able to do them,
right,
too. I mean, you got to start off by doing them in order to make them work.
Well, you also have to be able to set up the defense by making them do something they don't want to do.
That's, I mean, why was for decades the best trick play team in the league was Pittsburgh, even though they were a ground-based team. But that's where it comes into setting up the defense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back when like Neil O'Donnell or when Cordell Stewart was the quarterback, they weren't especially good passers, but they forced you to think, okay, we got to stop their run, and that opens so much up. And I mean, that's why like Bill Cowher loved the trick play.
Yeah,
with a fundamental ground-based offense.
100%. You set something up, then you flip it. Also, just last thing I wanted to say on Greg Dulcich. I also think they're only going to put him in situations that they believe he can win to start. So, again, they look out at the defense that they're being approached by. I keep thinking I know who the week one opponent is. and maybe this is my brain telling, I'm having a premonition, Seahawks.
Okay.
That's just my, that's what I have a, keep imagining the Seahawks.
So Broncos starting on the road.
Yes.
Okay.
At the Seahawks.
In a middle of the, on a 2 p.m. game.
This is not a prediction, it's a premonition. There's two different things.
Okay.
But I keep seeing that whenever I think about week one. I don't know why. Anyways, when they look out there and they're like, okay, look, you know, they're coming out there with these linebackers. We think we can get, we can, you know, line up Greg, have him split out, get a one-on-one. I think they'll do that a lot early. Just find him matchups they like and go have him exploit them.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what he can do is find those areas and where they're not 30 yards downfield. It's 15 yards downfield where he finds the opening. Yep. And really quick, when it comes to first plays, how about a Jerry Jeudy jet sweep and they actually hand the ball off to him? Wouldn't that just be a nice little tip of the cap to Pat Shurmur?
Turning of the page.
Yep, it would be.
I like that. I like that a lot. All right.
Should oh, by the way, comments? Real quick, just want to jump in because this is sort of tangential with the Broncos. Did you guys see what Ryan Tannehill said about mentoring?
Oh, God. Is it Flacco-esque?
Quote, I don't think it's my job to mentor him, but if he learns from me along the way, that's a great thing.
That's like word for word.
Yeah, Joe Flacco's comment was, I'm not worried about developing guys or any of that. That's what it is. That is what it is. I hope he, referring to Rich Scangarello, does it well. I don't look at that as my job. My job is to go win football games for this football team.
And how did that work out
for
Joe?
Failed at his job.
Yeah, he went two. The Broncos went 2-6 in Joe Flacco's 8 starts.
And now he is a mentor. That's his. That's his job title.
He realized there's a good paycheck in it if you just keep your mouth shut and be there for a young starter. Where else is Joe Flacco going to make $3 million a year?
Is he, like, in terms of just the whole package, is he your least favorite of the clown-carved QBs the Broncos have trotted out over the last 6 years?
Yes, because clearly he did not want to be in Denver, Colorado. He didn't say it overtly, but you got that sense every time he was up there that he was an East Coast guy. He didn't want to venture this far west. He seems, even though he's a backup, he seems much happier in New York, with the New York Jets. Was he briefly in Philadelphia, right?
Yep.
Seemed much happier in those places than he did in Denver.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what I was going to say rubbed me the wrong way. I didn't feel like he liked it here. I'm just like, I don't understand how that's possible.
He's a 995 corridor guy.
I get what you guys are saying, but no. Come on, guys. Paxton. You talk about clown
does
cars.
Does he even really count?
Yes, he was the first. He started it all.
He started,
got
what,
the Broncos.
Two more games than Kendall Hinton?
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly why. And, I mean, talk about not wanting
Wait,
it.
He had,
I mean,
yeah,
he,
yeah.
Didn't, he didn't want to be in the NFL. He
Kendall
didn't want
Hinton
to work
start.
For the NFL.
I will, yeah, but at least he wasn't, like, an ass
Joe,
about it.
Joe put more work into it. So
for
I,
sure.
I can
I just mean in terms of personality, that. The way they dealt with the media. Like, Paxton was always pretty good with us, I thought. Drew was the best. Teddy was really good. Mm-hmm. Teddy, you know, arguably could be the favorite.
Yep.
Just because he, you know, he didn't play overtly horrible.
And he was literally the best quarterback they've had.
Statistically, he was good.
Since Peyton in 2014.
He was a good leader. I would put Drew
owned
up there
to his
in
mistakes.
Terms of, like, just he was fun to cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Teddy owned up to his mistakes. Joe Flacco, I don't think, realized his shortcomings. I think Teddy understood his shortcomings probably too well.
Trevor's got to be up there, too, just because he was really nice, and it was kind of like a...
Yep.
I don't, this seems degrading, but like a cute story.
Wow, that's so degrading. You know, that lump he had on his shoulder wasn't very cute, but he battled through that.
His second head.
Yeah. And then where does Case Keenum check in on this?
Oh,
see, he's competing.
So
with,
forgettable.
He's competing with Joe. I mean, especially when we learn, was it from Devontae Booker that Case
didn't say hi to people
in the halls when he walked by? I mean, that is pretty darn bad.
He's too busy pushing his book.
It's very true.
How do you write a life story before a story's over?
Tim Tebow
I think
did.
His story ended
it
then.
Did. It was over,
In
yeah.
hindsight, it was perfect time to release
Strike while the iron's hot.
The climax of the Case Keenum biopic is him signing the contract.
That's the end.
That's the end. Because you don't want it to be the press conference.
It's a happy ending.
Because John Elway didn't even pronounce his last name correctly.
Right.
Case Keenum.
got mad at me for calling her a character.
Oh, gosh.
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes, yikes for sure.
Yikes to all of that era.
I think people over. Probably turned off the podcast now.
No,
when we dove into that, stuff.
Because if the Broncos were still going, Drew and Teddy, this would just be too dark. We couldn't be talking about this, right. joking about this. But now that we're on the other side, it's okay to take a step back and laugh at this past.
Although I think in the so Drew, if they'd gone for the Drew Teddy reality, I think Malik Willis would have been a Bronco right now.
That could have been fun. Not
in round two, though. But in round two,
yep. Okay, we can move. We can move on, though. I don't even remember those eras. Let's get to the questions. Do we have any super chats we need to hit, Kale? Nope. No super chats. Let's jump right in to the comments on the website.
First one coming in from C. Fillmore 72, and you know where he's coming from. He says, "Gentlemen, greetings from the west of England. I am loving the leaking news that the Broncos are heading to London.
This makes me nervous.
I'm not wanting to count chickens, but there's no smoke without fire." So he doesn't want to count chickens, but he's counting the chickens. "Look forward to meeting all of you and the UK best based DNVR fam come October 30th. Bring those Breck brews with you, Christopher."
That's allowed, right? You can put beers in your suitcase.
I have transported alcohol from Europe to the United States. I haven't done it the other way.
I've definitely put bottles in there. I just worry about the carbonation.
I guess I haven't. I think it was a carry-on. So I don't know.
I think the way to do this is, to have this needs to go up kind of to Breckenridge Brewery to say, "Okay, can we find a way to get some beers over there?"
That's true. You can't sell them like direct overseas.
Right.
But maybe they could just ship them to the bar that we're going.
Well, I think crates of Breck brews.
I mean, I just don't know what the corporate structure is regarding, obviously Anheuser-Busch has plenty of beer sales in England.
Right.
But I don't know what I don't think they distribute Breckenridge brews over now. But Because they already are in the market, can they kind of get a dispensation to get Breck brews over there for that reason?
We can only ask and find out.
The worst that can happen is they say no.
Yep.
But I think there's a way to make it happen, is what I'm saying.
Everyone needs a strawberry without, sky.
I think there's a way to make this happen without you guys having to smuggle beers in your suitcase.
Has there ever been a strawberry sky in London?
We'll be the first
like
ones.
In literal terms?
Probably like during the golden hour at Wimbledon.
All right,
fair. In the summertime, yeah.
From LDJ, man.
Strawberries and cream, strawberry sky, right?
Exactly. Hey, guys, haven't chimed in a while, but I listen every single day. Thank you for that. And you guys said something that hurt my heart. RK said he'd rather have Stephon Diggs over Cortland and Tim, and the same for Tyreek. And I'm wondering, how did we get to this point? And you guys wanted Debo. That made no sense to me.
I didn't want Debo.
I watched a lot of these wide receivers, and I'm scratching my head as how Drake London was the first wide receiver taken. So question, do you think you saw more freakish stuff in Drake London's film than Cortland Sutton's insane above-the-rim catches?
I feel like
we're moving the goalposts a lot.
You totally just changed it. We never said we'd rather have Drake London than Cortland Sutton.
Nope.
We've never said. And Tyreek Hill is not Drake London. Drake London is not Debo. Drake London is not Stephon Diggs.
Nope.
I stand by what we said, because I also agreed with you there about wanting those elite wide receivers over the two the Broncos have, but I wouldn't rather have Drake London than Cortland.
Very, very interesting, LDJ. You're moving the goalposts on us. He says, I don't know. My question to you all is, do you think the rookie 2018 Cortland tearing up training camp and abusing Bradley Roby and the huge breakout 2019 Cortland, that Cortland, I mean, is still wearing number 14. Do you think the current Cortland may not be the same after the ACL? Is a totally different question. To be fair, there were some games Court was dropping some pivotal catches and TDs, and that was tough to watch. So I guess all that to ask, is Cortland going to be the same this year as he was in 2019?
I mean, he has a chance to be even better than that, especially now that he has a real quarterback. And we're going to find out who the true Cortland Sutton is this year, because last year he had the legitimate reasoning, I don't want to call it an excuse, of coming back from the ACL. That was his first year. Now he's fully healthy. He's had Russ for it this entire offseason. It's not like Russ is coming in as a rookie. No, they've already had about a month and a half where they've been working together. And so this is Cortland's year to break out and prove that he's actually worth $25 million and the Broncos got a fantastic deal. Instead of us saying, okay, he's about a 1,000-yard receiver and that's about $15 million worth.
Yeah. Can you imagine Stephon Diggs or Tyreek Hill with Russ?
Man, Tyreek just going deep.
Obviously, we would never want him as a Bronco. Well,
look
but
at what Diggs has done with like Madden Kirk Cousins, terms. Right? Russ is better than Kirk Cousins.
Oh yeah, yeah, by a mile. Yeah,
so. And so we've seen, you know, we've seen Diggs with Cousins, we've seen Diggs with Josh Allen. I mean, it's
what were his stats with
J.A.?
Yeah,
crazy.
And that's why he got the massive contract.
Yeah, I think he led the NFL last year in receiving yards.
It was, I don't think so. 2 years ago, he had 127 catches, which is insane.
Maybe it was
for
catches
1,500 yards. Then last year, he had 103 catches for 1,200 yards.
Okay, yeah, I don't think he led, but maybe like over the last 2 years or something.
I could see that with 2,700 yards, or 2,750.
Yeah,
it's insane. Almost 1,400 yards.
127 catches is almost unfathomable.
That is crazy.
Did
and with
Broncos receivers have 127 catches last year?
That's a really good point. Man, he wasn't, I mean, he was a really good receiver with Kirk Cousins, but he wasn't as dominant as I thought. His two best years, the two most recent with Kirk Cousins, 102 catches for 1,000 yards, and then 63 catches for 1,100 yards. That's an insane 17.9 yards per catch.
That is insane.
In the NFL, that's nuts.
Dan Burke chimes in and says, hey guys, so some in Denver have mentioned how the presence of Jonas Griffith is a large reason why they felt comfortable in not prioritizing inside linebacker in this draft. So I want to know what you thought about him as a player and what his prospects could be moving forward. One, I don't think that affected it.
I agree.
I believe George Payton when he says the board just didn't fall that way. I also have said it forever that I don't think the Broncos value the position. But this is a new regime, so I gave them, you know, the benefit of the doubt that maybe they would. Not even that they need to, but just maybe that things would be different. It's not. And I think Jonas Griffith is a nice prospect. You know, it's so easy to forget some of these really forgettable games when the Broncos are just losing and scoring like 17 points or something. But I do remember sending out multiple tweets about Jonas Griffith in the later stretch of the season being like, I think the Broncos might have something here. So he's an exciting prospect, I would say, is what he still is. But he's like all the measurables. If you just like put his stats, like his specs on a piece of paper and then put him into this draft, we would have said, like, we like this guy, you should take him.
And I think with Jonas Griffith, he's still very cheap and young, so he still has a lot of way to develop. And they also really like what he brings on special teams, so if he doesn't show that development, he's still a really good piece. And it is just crazy that you still have Alexander Johnson and Kenny Young still out there as free agents right now. So, the Broncos, if things don't work out, they could turn to one of those guys and bring him back in training camp for a really low-value deal. And that, just like you said, not only do they not value the position, they've talked about Dime a lot. They're going to have Caden Stearns on the field a lot. They can use Baron Browning in that inside linebacker role as well.
I mean, I'd say you probably see more of Stearns than Jonas Griffith. The inside linebacker who's going to be on the field every down is going to be Josie Joel.
Mm-hmm.
You just hope he stays healthy.
If he does, he's fine. I mean, they do need somebody to be the quarterback of the defense. And that's Josie's biggest skill.
Exactly. Next one coming in from Bronc Euler says, hey, guys, got to say it's been pretty surreal to come out of the draft with zero quarterback drama in Broncos country, but I couldn't be happier about that. This draft has really got me intrigued by the evolution of our defense and the hyper-flexibility at all three levels. I'm excited by the idea of a little more smoke and mirrors in our personnel groupings and alignments, and with the collection of quarterbacks in our division, it'll be important to keep them uncomfortable mentally and in their reads, but at the same time, I'm a little nervous about laying on too much complexity with a first-year defensive coordinator. Do you guys have any concerns about things potentially getting a little too cute defensively with so many unknowns? Cheers, go Broncos, and let's go Oilers.
0-1. Okay, here's how I think about this. Who is on this defense? Josie Joel, you definitely trust him to soak up a new scheme. Justin Simmons, you definitely trust him to soak up. And I'm just going to keep going here. Kareem Jackson, Pat Surtain, Ronald Darby. You know, you look on the edge. Bradley Chubb, Randy Gregory. These guys, this is a very veteran defense. Now, of course, Nick Benito is going to come in there, and that's going to, you know, Baron Browning. You want to make sure that he has a grasp of things. Caden Stearns, those guys are going to play.
So they're all situational guys.
Yes, but on the whole, this defense is experienced. DJ Jones, you know, you go around this thing in – you just say, like, and even Pat Surtain, we learned about him last year. He picked up everything in, like, a week. So I'm not worried about it. Now, you don't want to overdo it. Start with the basics and build up to it. And I think by week 17, you're going to be calling a totally different defense than you were calling week 1. In terms of the flexibility you have and the understanding that you trust those guys. But every single player on this, not every, on the whole, most of the players on this defense are guys that should be able to pick things up. They've switched schemes before. They can do it easily.
And one thing that you always see happen is there's a lot more complexity in training camp. They're doing a lot crazier things in the preseason, and then they really dial it back once the regular season comes around. So I do think year one, it's not going to be the full defense that we could see in years two and three. And Ryan, I think one of the scenarios that he's referring to is I pointed out this scenario in an obvious pass rush situation. You have DJ Jones in the middle, Draymond Jones as a defensive end. Then you put Bradley Chubb down as a defensive end, Nick Benito as an outside linebacker, Randy Gregory as an outside linebacker, and then Baron Browning as an inside linebacker. And then he can cover or he can blitz as well. And with something like that, you have like 10 plays in that. So you're not it's not actually overly complicated. You learn this very easy, pick it up. And when you put that package out, the guys aren't thinking about 150 different plays.
Right. Man, I love the idea of lining Benito and Chubb up on the same side, or Benito and Randy Gregory on the same side. Twisting those guys, there's so much you could do, and there's a lot of athleticism there to make things really difficult.
That's something we better see.
It sounds fun.
Now that they have so many outside linebackers.
It sounds really fun.
It does.
Especially with Chubb, you know, being on the bigger side where you can – because we're talking about third and ten here.
Right.
You know, so you're not worried about them running, you know, inside zone to that side.
Yep.
You're just getting after it, trying to confuse those offensive linemen. And the way that offensive linemen are getting outmatched by edge rushers right now is like it's unfair.
Right.
We need more elite athletes to want to be offensive linemen because elite athletes are becoming edge rushers. I forget who we were talking about the other day, but it was like maybe it was Benito. They were like, why was he not a tight end or something like that? I mean, there's way more money as that edge rusher. All these athletic freaks who are coming, you know, to high school teams they're probably playing on offense too, but they're being told, you got to learn to rush the passer. That's where all the money is.
Yep, exactly, exactly. And next one and last one coming in from Pastor Red says, hey, guys, I'm feeling very grateful as of late and want to hear some positivity on the pod. So what attributes do you most admire about your co-hosts here on the DNVR Broncos podcast? Much love from New Hampshire, Pastor Rhett.
Well, Mace is easy. I admire his memory and recollection of things.
I mean, literally the encyclopedia.
Yeah. Exactly. And Zach is easy for me, too. I admire his organization.
Thank you.
Positivity. I, both of you guys, I admire your positivity.
I like that.
I'm a little more of a realist, and I've kind of accepted this is who and what I am. But doesn't mean I don't admire the optimism.
Fair enough.
And I love the positivity that you bring, and I think it all mashes well.
I think it does too. I think it does too. That's why we work. That's a great question to end the day on.
Yeah, I love it.
Speaking of positivity, I'm feeling very positive. Yes. Now. So that is going to wrap it up for us today. This has been fun. I love the conversation about Greg Dulcich, and I'm really excited to find out how it plays out. Because we had three very different answers and three very different expectations. So we'll see what happens, hopefully soon. I know we have rookie minicamp coming up right around the corner, so that's fun. But stay tuned with us here. Of course, we'll be back with you tomorrow and every weekday after that. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you tomorrow on the DNVR Broncos podcast. Understand that you need some time. I know some landmarks we used to hit. We're flying cotton.